celebration. Energy, frequency, vibration.
What's going on, world? I want to welcome you to another episode of the Universal Frequency Podcast. I have my brother Carlos J. Chaparro with me, and we are going to bust it down. What's good, Carlos? How you feeling today?
I'm feeling good, man. Always good to be in a space where I get to chop it up with you.
Yeah, man. I'm excited about you being on today. I'm excited about our conversation and the dialogue that we're going to have. And I really think it's an important topic for a lot of reasons, being brown in corporate. And I even think that being able to reach across the aisle, I mean, me and you talk about this all the time. Black and Spanish people face very similar plights. But often when I use the term black, people think I'm just talking about what they deem as traditional American black, right? But the reality is colonization, the hierarchy of the powers that be, a lot of the things come into place, they affect our communities in the very same manner because we are pretty much one and the same. So I'm excited to have you here to have that perspective with me.
Absolutely, man, because especially it's been my experience for the past, what, like 10 years now, you know, and there wasn't exactly a script for me to follow when I started experiencing some of these things for the first time. So it's that dialogue between people who look like me and I've gone through the same experiences that kind of helped me navigate, you know, some territory I've never been in before.
Okay, cool. Oh, before we get started, we got to show some love to Donkey Bonks TV. All right, man. So the article I want to talk about or use as a platform for what we're going to discuss today. Let me pull it up on screen now. Hold on one second. Share screen. Okay. View tab. Add to stream. All right. So we can see it and you can see it clearly. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I got it pulled up too.
Okay, perfect. All right. So this this information is from the Society of Human Resource Management, or excuse me. This is Society for Human Resource Management, SHRM.org, and this is a platform with resources for human resource professionals, certifications, education resources, but ultimately just really a great resource, right? And I've said that word like a million times, and that's never the goal. but if you are a minority a human resources professional, I definitely recommend you come to SHRM.org to check out the information they have. And what I want to get into is this study around the experience of blacks in corporate. All right. So just moving forward. All right. So when I was looking at this article, I'm just going to get straight to it. Right. There was a survey taken, and during this survey, it says 65% of black professionals say black employees have to work harder to advance, as opposed to only 16% of white professionals agree with that statement. So let's peel that back first. Why do we think there's such a huge disparity into what people are feeling around their experience in the workplace? I'm gonna kick that over to you.
Well, I would say for one, I don't know how the study was conducted or the survey, but whenever I get these, I feel like I can't really be too forthcoming or honest or transparent, because there may be consequences for that. You know, from my very early on in my career in corporate, I learned that the rules aren't the same for everybody. Like, I can't say and do certain things that other people can't. And they typically don't look like me, the ones who get to get away with it. Or it gets even perceived as, oh, that's good feedback. Because sometimes even I could be giving I've come across this a lot, where I'm giving like good feedback, a constructive criticism. And it just gets perceived as, you know, negativity or the guy doesn't get it, or, you know, difficult to coach, even though I can literally take it verbatim from one of my counterparts. And I was like, oh, that's great. We're going to bubble that up to leadership. That's a great idea, Steve, you know, like, That happens all the time. So for me personally, I feel like I can't bring, they don't talk about bringing your whole self to work. I'm like, I've never really felt that I could do that in the spaces that I've been working in. So maybe that's part of it, you know?
Right, right. And that's interesting because that would also allude to some of these numbers being suppressed. Right?
Exactly. Yeah, the number might be a lot higher.
Right. Which is crazy. Which is crazy. And even the dynamic of even feeling like there could be blowback or mm-hmm. could be a potential consequences for how you may advocate for yourself is interesting.
Right.
Is interesting. This article, I scrolled past it. More than two-thirds of Black HR professionals in the U.S. believe the organizations are providing enough opportunities for Black employees, but their white colleagues are convinced. Right? So I wonder what this actually means. I wonder what this means. Is it that they're advocating for these changes and they're saying, hey, we need more resources. We need a more aligned focus here, a different strategy. And their counterparts are being like, nope, it's not necessary.
Right. I mean, I feel like this parallels a lot of the sentiment in the United States right now, right? There's a lot of people saying, like, hey, these social issues are a real problem for us. And you got people on the other side saying, no, this ain't a problem at all. You know, this is not even real. My favorite one, one of my own managers said, I don't even see color. I'm like, oh, man, this is wild. We can't start there, brother. I mean, I don't know.
And that term, never seeing color, always really, it was weird to me because I absolutely see color, but I embrace people. I see their differences and I embrace them. There's nothing wrong with acknowledging that we have cultural differences and ethnic differences, but we're still all humans. And, you know, there's a wealth of knowledge to share about this human experience, man. It's just, it's crazy to me. It's crazy to me.
You know what's even crazy?
Look at it like that.
I gotta share this story. That's actually a true story. That I had obviously gonna keep names out of it, but I had a leader express this colorblind ideology during a post George Floyd like listening session with his teammates of color. So this was I saw that. So what this individual didn't know is that I actually saw the memo that went out to managers saying, hey, this is the state of of the country right now. You may want to pull up with all of your team, definitely check in with your people of color, see how they're feeling, and take it as an opportunity to listen. This conversation was prefaced with two things. One, said, hit me with the, I don't even see color, and this is on WebEx, so my face is like, I'm in my office by myself, like, what? You know what I mean? And then it got followed up with, you know, this is during the protest, and follows up by saying, I don't even see what everyone is, and I quote, up in arms about. And that's when I was like, from that day, I'm like, this place may not be the cultural fit that I need in my career. You know what I mean? Because right. I don't even know how you advance in a place that is spreading or allows people like that to spread their ideas from a perspective of leadership.
Right. Like, why are they enabled?
You get what I'm saying? It's wild.
And even when it comes to like empathy, right? Like the human experience, you're going to hear me say that a lot. We have mm-hmm. to be able to relate to people's pain and identify, and even if it doesn't directly affect us, be empathic. I remember when Haiti and Puerto Rico were both hit with earthquakes. Yeah. I am neither Haitian nor Puerto Rican, but I have a huge amount of empathy and just love and concern for all of my friends and family who have friends and family that are affected, right? Yeah. And like, I don't need to, you know, to be culturally Haitian or be Puerto Rican or to even come from that part of the world to be empathic about it. It's right, like, yeah. It's almost soulless. I hate to say it like that.
It is. Like, yeah. And morally empty. And we share spaces with these people in a professional setting every day, you know? So, and that, I think that does have a compounding effect over time on how I even view myself within these spaces, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah, man, that's staggering. And I've always felt like people should be judged in their merits, right? But we have to be honest. Not everyone is playing the game the same.
Hold on, no.
Hold on. So,
mental toll. Yeah. What's this part about?
So, in addition, Black professionals are more likely to encounter racial prejudice and microaggressions than any other racial or ethnic group. 43% of black executives have colleagues use racially insensitive language in their business.
I experience this every day. I experience this every day, bro. Every day. Like,
Tell me how.
All right, so one, it starts off like, you know, sometimes banter or jokes that are funny to them, but you're really sitting there. You know, like that dead space in the beginning of a WebEx, everybody's hopping on, you hit the little beeps, and people start the chit-chat. This was actually, I'll give you an example. Remember that story of the, there was like a financial advisor that was in Fairfield and was like threw the smoothie at the woman and like called her immigrant, you know, called her a bitch, all this crazy stuff, right? So this was probably, this is the Monday after the weekend that happened. It's all over the news. And obviously it deeply bothered me as well. So I was like waiting on the WebEx and they started talking about it. But they were joking about it. So like my manager was basically like, oh, I actually know that guy. We played football together. Yeah, it must have been, you know, they kept trying to make it about the peanut allergy because the kid supposedly had an allergy. But, you know, without almost trying to like completely turn a blind eye to this dude's behaviors and the way he spoke. I was so bothered by it. One of my colleagues at the time was an immigrant on a worker's visa working for the same organization. So when he saw that, this was his first week in the North. He came from the South. Like Florida. So when he saw that, we just so happened to have lunch and we were talking about it. He's like, you know what? What are we going to do about this, Carlos? Are we going to just let this shit slide or are we going to take some kind of action? And we actually put together a letter with the help of his wife, who was actually a labor lawyer. She represented farmers in the South.
Okay.
And just because we wanted to make sure that if we stirred up the pot too much that we weren't going to be left without jobs. And we were doing it in a respectful and professional manner, just trying to bring in someone's attention. It went nowhere. We got no response. The market president of this area basically washed his hands of it, pointed us in the direction of like one like Latina in like a whole other part of the country and just CC'd us on the email. And she never responded either.
Hey, she's like, Spanish. Go talk to her.
Yeah. You know, it's great. He was like, who could I think of? And he just thought of like the highest ranking, you know, Hispanic he knew, which is in a whole other part of the country. And it was like, wow, that's wow. It's also like just certain jokes that you get sometimes. I used to get like a lot of, you know, when you come in with professional attire, oh, you clean up nice. Like, was that dirty before? Like, what are we talking about? What do you mean I clean up nice?
What are you actually saying?
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like in their mind is going to follow up with for a, you know what I mean? And then insert whatever there.
You look sharp for a.
Yeah. I didn't know you could do that. You know what I mean? Right. Things like that. Or even the way I'm coached. You know, sometimes, like I was mentioning earlier, when I'm having dialogue during like a coaching session and I'm expressing, you know, an opportunity where things could get improved or sometimes just standing up for myself because somebody has to, right? It gets perceived as aggressive. It's like, oh, Carlos, you're being, I don't know. It's always something negative, right? And then I was like, all right, I'm not going to say nothing because that was what my counterpart was saying. Oh, when that happens, I do it all the time. I just agree with them. I did the same shit that someone else gets to get away with. I did it. Oh, now you're disengaged. I'm like, bro, I'm damned if I say something. I'm damned if I don't. I really feel like I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do.
Bro, and that really leads to the next sentence of this paragraph.
Oh, shit, it's right there. Mischaracterized as angry. Holy shit. I should you know, I didn't even see that. That's it. I experienced that to a T, bro. That's crazy.
Include having a colleague touch their hair without permission, being mischaracterized as angry, and being excluded from growth opportunities or one-on-one meetings with leadership. I've experienced that as well. Now, first thing, let's talk about the hair thing. So, my daughter's mixed, but she looks black, right? And people want to touch her hair when her hair is done. And so we've had the conversation of her clearly drawing the line with people that they are not allowed to touch her hair.
Right.
Straight up. Do not touch. You don't invade anyone's personal space.
Right.
And they both know to say, hey, don't touch my hair, please. Mm-hmm. The fact that that sort of behavior can transition over to the workplace, and I've seen it. I have a colleague that has dreads. I'm not even going to say his name. He has dreads, and his hair is braided up, and he got it lined up. Dude's looking sharp. I've seen people go, oh, your hair is nice, and reach for it. And it's just like, yo, why do you feel entitled to be able to invade someone's personal space and touch anything of theirs?
Right? Superiority. My hypothesis is superiority.
Because you know, we all know it could not work the other way around.
Oh,
you
God.
You can't walk in and be like, hey, Karen, yeah. You know, just grab her hair. It's a wrap for me at that point. So why is it allowed when the shoe is on the other foot? I'm sorry. Right, go ahead, bro.
Yeah, I think it's superiority, man. I think there are individuals who genuinely feel that whether it's conscious or unconscious that they are better, and they are entitled to do that because maybe they are better. I don't personally know. That's my hypothesis, because I'm thinking about it from, like, if it were me, like, what would make me think that it's okay to touch someone in any way, especially on, like, a, you know, introductory scenario. Like, I'm meeting you for the first time. Oh, your hair is beautiful. That's just weird. You know what I mean? Like, anything outside of a handshake is just like you're doing too much. You got to relax. You know what I mean?
Right. Especially in a corporate setting. I don't know what some of y'all do after the club when in the party.
Right.
But like at the workplace, it's clearly inappropriate.
It's true.
I've also experienced being excluded from one-on-one meetings with leadership. So I have an experience, right? And I can't say where, when, or how. Where a high-ranking senior leadership official wanted to get feedback from my team. And so we started, you know, we're probably a team of 10 or 12 people. He started meeting with members of the team, but he only met with 3 or 4 of them. And about changes that were coming, that severely impacted our role. How we are paid, what our compensation is, what our benefit structure is like. And I'm thinking to myself, why is it that I am excluded from these conversations? Like, hey, I would have loved to, hey, Ken, let's hop on an email. Let's have a discussion about some things that are coming into play. And I just really want to get your thoughts and your perspective. And not to say that I could have made the decision left or right based on his feedback from me. But what I can say is that I would have had an opportunity to advocate. And I don't know if maybe it wouldn't have been an easy conversation for him, because I don't make these conversations easy, so to speak. And not that I'm adversarial, I'm just articulate and detailed, right? To where I'm really trying to be impactful with the time that we have.
Right. So here's a question. So what do you do with that?
Every leader likes that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, what do you do with that, right? So these things happen to us all the time, right? What is the appropriate response when we're going through these things on a constant basis? Sometimes in some situations it's daily, sometimes it's weekly, sometimes it's monthly. I don't know about you, but for me, I feel like I put on a lot of excess weight and stress on myself, because I feel like I gotta just eat that. You know what I mean? That's what I gotta give in exchange for the opportunity, for the privilege to be here, even though I got there just like everybody else. If anything, a much harder path and a lot more convincing to do, because we both know that in the spaces that we work in, that there are people that get to hide behind the mediocrity, and we must always stand on excellence every single day, and we cannot deviate from that. And if we do, there's a serious price to pay, you know. So what, I don't know how it is for you, but for me, I feel like it's starting after 10 years, you know, maybe I don't have the proper tools or the right network, but I feel like I've internalized a lot of that stuff. And it's caused a lot of extra stress, as I feel like I'm carrying a lot of excess weight that a lot of my counterparts don't ever have to worry about.
Yeah, and that's the one thing we do not want to do, is internalize these things. Mm-hmm. But it's very difficult just to say, hey, don't carry that stress. Stress is something that, depending on how you manage, what your lifestyle is like, how you are set up to vent, it can be very difficult, you know, to relieve that anxiety. And sometimes that builds up and manifests in other ways. Right. I would say a lot of these conversations definitely have to be navigated through the human resources department of the company that you work for. So with regards to someone like actually touching your hair, that should be a huge no-go. Like, that's get on the horn, tell HR right away, go get your money, right? Yeah. when it comes to microaggressions, and whether people consciously or unconsciously acting in certain manners, I do believe that there is some sort of conditioning that is taking place, to where a lot of these actions that may occur, people aren't consciously thinking of. Not to say that they're not accountable for it, but it's so ingrained to how they operate, and it's so like normal for them that they don't even see what's wrong.
Until
you call it to their attention, they won't know. And so I think that having an appropriate way to say, hey, Carlos, hey, listen, pulling someone to the side, you know, when you made this comment, I know you didn't mean it in any aggressive or attacking manner, but this is how it made me feel. And I'll kindly ask that, you know, when it comes to that sort of language, that we just please refrain from it, right? Having the ability to go into your emotional tool belt and have that conversation, I do think is essential. That does not mean people are going to actually listen to it, though.
Right.
But that is one of the ways we can help manage these dynamics. I would also say if the company has a good culture, like a strong leadership culture, you should be able to go to human resources or your direct manager. So, hey, go to your direct manager and say, when this senior leader did this and excluded me, this is how it made me feel.
But you think that's so, like, I feel like that's the logical thing to do.
Right.
But I also feel like for certain people, with how much is at risk for them, it's not always a safe option. So I think that's why a lot of people do opt for, I'm just gonna bite the tongue on this one. You know what I mean?
But you shouldn't be penalized for that. You should not be penalized for respectfully asking the right questions.
I agree. But how many times do we hear these stories of people who do are either they're a whistleblower or just standing up for themselves for these instances? And maybe the retaliation is not necessarily direct, like, hey, you don't have a job anymore, but like further exclusion happens or the labeling happens. Now you're not coachable. Now you're a problem. You're not a team player. You're a lone wolf. You're aggressive. You're not easy to coach. You don't play well with others. What, you know, all these labels that you get, even though you're doing the right things that are coached to us, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a really tricky dynamic, and depending on your personality and your emotional skill set to deal with some of these things, this is easier said than done.
Right.
Not everyone can maintain their composure to actually be able to make it digestible for someone who's performing a microaggression on them. Let's just be clear. Right. Also, being mischaracterized as angry. I deal with this all the time because just to flat out, I'm an introvert. Mm-hmm. Most of the times, I'm self-contained within my thoughts. But I know in certain environments, there's a caricature that that may either work better or worse, depending on what you're trying to accomplish. Right. So I go to work, I'm bubbly. You don't know what I got going on, right? I am being the person that I need to be in that environment. But when there's times where I may not feel as bubbly, or I may just be quiet, it's like, hey, what's the matter? Are you angry? Are you upset? I'm like, no, I'm not angry. Right. I'm just not finding everything you're saying funny. Or I'm just not making every conversation we have today an easy, convenient one for you, because Lord knows not the conversations that I have are not. And it's just, that's even a microaggression. You can't even allow to be reserved, you know, as opposed to constantly, you know, I don't want to say the cheerleader, but constantly the advocate for the culture. Like for us, I feel like for us to be high ranking in any company culture, we have to absolutely adore it.
Yeah, but you got to drink the Kool-Aid.
You got to drink the Kool-Aid. You got to live it. You got to walk it. I've had many examples of senior leadership, and I've had some that didn't care. And the ones that didn't care, you can guess what hue they were, right? And you know, obviously, For the people that are, you know, the melanated folks in leadership, they've had to show and prove that they drink the Kool-Aid. Now, I want to back up on this, right? Because this is not just about race. There's also sexism at this point. I'm pretty sure that if you were to ask and survey women about do they need to work harder, or is it a more difficult experience, or whether they get microaggressions against them, you know, right. If they're not always bubbly, right? I can imagine some of the things that they may experience. And I don't even want to attempt to try to conceptualize what they may feel. I just would like to get maybe someone on the podcast that can help us bring this back.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I got a couple people in mind that I know they'll break it down to a T, because they're dope. And they've actually had this conversation with me before. And a lot of times in the same organizations that I was in at the same time with them. So definitely a perspective that has to be heard. Because it's definitely, I feel like what we go through, it's definitely harder. I feel like the people who have it the hardest in corporate America are black women or women of color, period. Like, there's so much pitted against them, and so many barriers, so many obstacles, but not too many advocates, right, besides themselves and some of the corporate fluff. So the way that I look at it, they definitely need more allies, and conversations and dialogue and spaces like this could definitely, you know, start improving those conditions.
Yeah. There's racism, there's sexism, and then there's both. I had the opportunity to sit in on a panel in New Haven, it's probably about 10 years ago, with some really high ranking women, some boss women, like chief of the New Haven police, one of the first black athletes to go to the Olympics and track. Wow. So I think it was just a bunch of just high powered, heavy hitting women, and to hear them talk to a bunch of other young girls about dealing with race and dealing with sexism and then dealing with both, you know, it was a conversation that I'm typically not privy to. I know what it's like, right, to be judged differently based on the perception of my skin color. I do not know what it's like to feel like I am to be treated as a subservient or being treated differently just because of my gender.
Yeah, and paid differently. And paid differently.
I don't know what that's like. So you're right. For the black and minority women out there who go into these, you know, toxic work environments or work environments that don't necessarily acclimate to their strengths or may acclimate to other, I don't want to say strengths. I want to say comfort, right? I don't know if that's the right word. What's the word I'm looking for? Not comfort, just a healthy workplace. Let's just say that.
Right, right. And many times overqualified and underpaid, but they had to go through just to show that they were even worthy of the opportunity.
Right.
We know that the true worth, their what's the word I'm looking for? Their market value, like for what they could do with the accolades that they've accomplished so far, should be way more than what they're making.
Yeah. if I had a dollar for every time I heard "you're articulate for a black guy," I could retire. Yo, listen. I feel like this is like they're speaking to me
because
I often feel like I get looked at as if I'm stupid, right? Like, I remember when it came down to me having to take this exam, it's just a mortgage certification, and I had to pass this exam to actually go into my role. And really, all I needed to do was just to take this test and let me sit behind someone that's doing it, and then a month later, I'll be rocking and rolling. I started having dialogue like, okay, your test is coming up. And then, you know, after your test, if you have to retake it again, I'm like, retake it again? What do you mean? I'm not taking this again. I'm passing it the first time, right? Right? Like I don't know why I would give you the appearance that I am not going to put the legwork in to be successful or to do what I need to do just because of the color of my skin. But I'm going to do it. And maybe it wasn't a black thing. Maybe it was just a me thing. Who knows?
But awesome.
I remember when I passed the test, they're like, "Oh, you passed? Wow, congrats. Wow."
Yeah, possible, but not likely. You know what I mean? Like,
right. It's like, okay, wow.
You sure?
Right. Like you're surprised. Hey, man, I mean, again, these are things that often make us stronger. Right. It's and I hate to talk about being stronger because sometimes I feel like not everyone needs to be strong. Strength is not always a result of having tough times. I mean, it is. Right. But like there's other ways to get strength aside from going through trauma. Right.
And
like, the price of strength should not be worth trauma. Right. So
and you shouldn't have to be strong all the time. You shouldn't have to be strong all the time. You should be able to just cool it.
Right. I often feel like, you know, it's like playing life on all Madden. You know, like, to give you an example, same user, same game. So when people are like, "Oh, well, I played that game and I was able to score and I was able to do this." Yeah, you're right. You are. You do play the same game. You pick up the same controller, go into the same system. But when you play the game, the system's helping you a little more because I'm playing an all Madden and you're playing an all pro. Right? That user catch is a little more difficult.
Facts.
I don't get the same calls from the referees, you know, like little things occur, you know, and those are the things that make it strong, I guess.
Yeah, but we can't forget that there's value in that. And I mean a lot, you know, with that strength that we have. I like to call it grit sometimes too.
Yeah, yeah.
Because grit is not necessarily something that you can just get because you went to college or you read in a book. I think it's these life experiences that allow you to tap into that. And there's definitely value in that because how many times, I don't know if this happens to you, but for me and my brother, you know, we grew up it was a mixed community, but it was predominantly white and there was affluent people there. We definitely weren't. But the affluent parents of kids that just didn't have grit really tried to like set up stuff. So like, hey, why don't you talk to him? Why don't you hang out? And like really try to give him free mentoring because like I want my son to have what you have. I was like, so if you see the value in it, I was like, there's gotta be value. Well, hold on, you mean to tell me that all that private school, all this and the college wasn't enough? You need something else too? You needed the grit? It's like, nah, you're gonna have to earn that one, you know what I mean?
Yeah, grit and perseverance is key. Whenever I hire, whenever I build a team, and I've talked about this on previous episodes, having perseverance or the ability to bring your best self when the stakes are the highest is huge. Mm. I need to know when things don't work the way they're supposed to work and when this shit goes haywire that you can focus your energy and deliver your best efforts. Not to say that it won't hurt, not to say that it won't be hard, not to say that there won't be real life fallout, but I need to know you're going to show up. And that's right. and that's key, because the reality is the way the universe works, there's going to be adversity. There's going to be challenges. There is nothing that you want in life that is worth accomplishing that will not have some sort of resistance. That is a fact. That is a fact. I've had opportunity to speak with some, like you have, some really, really high-ranking men of color. I mean, actuaries, senior vice presidents, the state directors, right? And when we have this conversation about race and how hard it is, they acknowledge it. But they also say, it can't stop me.
True.
Right? they go, yeah, I they're like, yeah, you're right. I know what it is. I'm just going to put the work in harder, because at the end of the day, they can't out hustle, or they can't out this, or I'm going to be my best self in spite of this. And that's the type of strength that when you can get to that point of it, to where like you're like, you know what, bring it. Yeah, sure. You know what? I'll be better than everyone else because I have to be. But then that's just going to make me better than everyone else, right? I'll cross my T's and I'll dot my I's and I'll be the best performer that I have to be just so I can simply exist in this space. But I will not allow to be mediocre, and I'll be great because of it.
And but let's not forget those individuals, right, who do ascend to those levels and then actually become part of the problem and continue to perpetuate those issues. Because that happens as well. Just because one of us made it, we think, all right, where are you going to look out for me? Someone will be like, do I know you? You know what I mean? Like, whoa, we were together for like forever. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? That happens too. I'm not saying it's every single time, but I have seen that a lot of the things that they were advocating against, you know, when they were at a certain position, now they got promoted a couple times, they have this power, and now they're perpetuating those same issues because now there's money on the table, right? There's power on the table, and that does kind of change the dynamics for people, you know. And very few don't let that change them at all, and those become very excellent leaders, and we all know who those people are, but it's definitely a challenge, you know. It takes grit, it takes courage, it takes integrity to do that, at least on a consistent basis, and it actually be a part of your identity and your brand.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe this is the way I'm ingrained, but why would you not want to send the elevator back down?
Man, I can't even tell you how many times
what intrinsic value is there to keeping the elevator up, right? Why would you want to be inclusive? And again, I understand that depending on your personality, your background, you could have been stuck on the island and fought yourself solo, wherever to the point that you got. But it doesn't matter. It costs you nothing to say, hey, listen, it was extremely difficult for me to get to this point.
Right.
I'm just going to make sure that the next person that's like me doesn't have to go through the bullshit that I went through just to get to a similar space.
You know, it's wild. I actually got that from my mentor, in finance. He's actually he's a professor at Southern. We worked together for a couple years, and he was extremely important in my life, still is. And he was the first person to say, listen, Carlos, you know, well, for one, it was that manifesting that I am going somewhere, and that validation, like, hey, you do belong here, and as a member of your community, I'm gonna hype you up. You know what I mean? I'm gonna make sure that I see you one day. You know what? You're gonna be there one day. And he told me right off the rip. He said it will cost you nothing to send the elevator back down. Just remember that. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking about that. I was like, wow, like, why wouldn't you do that? Especially when in a lot of instances, it really does cost nothing to put someone on, to make an introduction, to do a you know, email a resume, CC a hiring manager, recruiter. It doesn't cost nothing, but we don't do it as often as we should. You know what I mean? It's wild.
Yeah, man. Here's the thing, right? And I don't know if everyone thinks like this, but legacy, right? What's going to be said about you when you're no longer here? Do you want to be considered as a person that just achieved their goals, took care of themselves, and faded away? Right? Hey, listen, because at the end of the day, the people that you know will remember you.
Yeah.
Or you will be known as someone that helped as often as they could. and put people in position as often as they could. Not that they did it to a detriment of your own personal gain, but as much as you could do it, you could do it. And you genuinely helped people, and they helped people, and the people that they helped people. Mm. Like, why would you want that for your legacy? And you know, and that's a rhetorical question. And obviously, not everyone is like me. And I'm speaking from the lens of who I am. But it just, I don't understand why people don't value that.
Right. Well, remember, we are forced to participate in this capitalist system on a daily basis. So it's hard. We have to resist this idea of only measuring ourselves in dollars and cents and net worth and you know, these certain accolades. Sometimes it's important to take inventory. What kind of impact am I having? What kind of impact am I having on my family? What kind of impact am I having for the company I work for, my business, my friends? You know what I'm saying? We should be measuring ourselves in that way as well.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's interesting, man. All right. So U.S. professionals who have encountered racial prejudice at work. Source being Black in America Corporate, COCO 2019. Okay. 58% of total Black professionals have encountered racial prejudice, according to the survey. 41% of Latino professionals, 38% of Asians, and 15% of whites. Now, now here's the thing. I actually think that Latino number may be higher, but it goes down to a deeper seated issue where not every Latino considers themselves Latino at times, I think.
Yeah, or even identify as Black. A lot of them don't because
right,
I'll tell you from my own experience as a Puerto Rican, I'm clearly a darker skinned Puerto Rican, but they are blonde hair, blue eyed, white passing ones who definitely, when it comes to the census, that little disclaimer when you're filling out an application, white. You know, white, you know, because they feel that they fit into that box. And, you know, they can identify as however they want. But I do think because of that, in situations like this, these numbers will get skewed for sure.
Yeah. And I don't think the goal is to say, hey, well, Black people, you know, face the most racial discrimination and Latinos and Asians, blah, blah, blah,
right.
blah, blah, blah.
Absolutely but not.
I think the goal is to understand that there's a disparity here and there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what the focus should be on. And listen, it's no secret that Black people in this country have stood at the forefront for racial equality in our society. The ability to read, vote, simply exist, use a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of those things for non-whites in this country came by the blood of Black people.
100%.
100%. Right? And so when I see numbers like this, it only confirms that struggle is still taking place, right? And yes, this our society, our capitalistic society, is more diverse and does allow for more people from different backgrounds to come and make a way for themselves. But these numbers also show that they're experiencing some sort of racial prejudice.
Right.
And I've had conversations with people who flat out said, "So what? It's not easy." Right? Who cares? The racial prejudice is nothing, et cetera, et cetera. And again, why that bothers me, right? And I'm being honest, is because, yes, at the end of the day, you can get called names. You have to get over it, right? But some of this prejudice is not just name calling. Right. I think when they say things like this, they think about it was just a simple term. Oh, you know, who cares if they called you this? You got to get over that. No, bro, this is stemming from like the Black Wall Streets of, you know,
facts.
The Philadelphia move bombings. You know what I'm saying? Like all the times that society has responded aggressively to Black excellence, especially in the case of Black Wall Street, but just any infrastructure.
Black advancement. Black advancement. Yes. Any advancement was a threat to them. So, because more for you in their minds means less for them. So they have to actively oppress and many times just snatch away or act as gatekeepers to the opportunities that actually allow you to have a livable wage. Let's be honest. A lot of these people are gatekeepers to opportunities that there's plenty of qualified people of color. But you know, with the nepotism, the favoritism, these prejudices, we don't many times not even consider it, even when we're in the running and highly qualified, overqualified, you know, or just next up, like it's my turn. Like, listen, I see everybody in this department get promoted. Why am I still here?
Right, Right. Yeah. No, man, it's tough. And when I bring up things like that, people are like, oh, well, you can't bring up things for the past and blah, 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 blah. Bro, this is less than 100. This is 100 years ago. Tulsa happened in 1921. This is 100 years ago. This is three generations ago. This is not that far off. People make it seem talking about 1400 AD, you know, this is modern conception of this country, right?
Right.
These things have occurred. And to think that there aren't still nuances and little trickle down effects of how black advancement is treated, or dare I say it, traditional non-white advancement is treated in a corporate structure where the leadership, we all know, is predominantly male and white.
Yeah, well, we have to remember there is
I'm pretty sure if there's yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, we have to remember that there is an active campaign in this country to discredit that black experience.
Of course.
Look at what's happening on the educational level. They're trying to take stories like Black Wall Street out. They're trying to take transatlantic slave trade out. They're trying to take civil rights movement out. And we're talking about the 60s, bro. So, like, with all that happening, we have to, even at work, resist these behaviors that are trying to erase your experience that you know to be true because you heard it from the people who came before you, and you're feeling it now as a human being in the present. So don't try to tell me I'm crazy. Don't try to tell me that it was yesterday. No, this stuff is still permeating in our society today. It's just, here's the thing about what we're, and you know, I Bichelle Alexander taught me this in the New Jim Crow. Racism is highly adaptable. We just use different words, bro. We use, you know what I'm saying? We say different things. We have different terms for what has been going on for a very long time in this country. And unfortunately, regrettably, these things do persist in the professional setting. In offices, it doesn't even have to be an office. Let's be real. Anywhere where you're getting paid, there's probably going to be some kind of dynamic like this that exists.
Yeah, man. Yeah, and listen, why is this important, right? Why is it important to shed light on these dynamics, and why do we talk about it? Mm-hmm. Number one, I want people to know that you are not alone.
Yes.
Right?
Powerful stuff. Yeah, it's powerful.
We have to have these conversations so you can know that you're not on an island. You have other humans that are experiencing something similar, and you can and will get through this. That's why it's important for us to talk about this, right? Because ultimately, again, the adversity that we fake is only going to make us great. When we think about the first black women at NASA, you mean to tell me that they didn't get hit with some craziness, right? Like, right? But that just made them some of the strongest mathematicians in that entire sector of the government, right? So this is what I'll say. If you are experiencing something like this, first off, I'm not trying to allude that every resistance that you face in the workplace is due because of your race. And this has to be said. Now, this is a survey about how people are feeling. There is some personal accountability in this, right? So there may be some individuals that may be exhibiting behaviors that is closing doors on them, or they may be acting in manners that may cause some barriers and doors to close. I'm not saying that that's not part of this, right? There is some personal accountability, but that's not the entirety of the story, right? So this for those of it in the crowd, they're going to say, oh, well, who's telling people not to take accountability? No, there is accountability here, but there's also accountability in the real life system that we're working in. But if you have a company with strong leadership, right, and it may be diverse, it may not be, but ultimately, strong leadership, good people. I would definitely say have that conversation with your boss about what you're feeling, right? Yeah. And that could be a landmine depending on the boss that you have. But I've had managers that have been women, that have been white, right? That have been completely different than what I am. And I can go to them and say, hey, this is what I'm feeling. And they've shown me empathy because they were a good person. Mm-hmm. And so finding and identifying the good people within leadership to say, hey, these are some of the things that are maybe occurring. This is what's on my mind. And just asking for, hey, how should I deal with some of these dynamics? I think is a hugely, hugely powerful tool. Not saying, hey, this is what's wrong. Fix it. What can I do to put myself in a better position? And when you phrase it like that, they'll look at it through your lens and maybe they'll understand that, hey, there's more work that needs to be done here. Secondly, I don't even like talking about like this dynamic ever, because it's like, oh, how do you acquiesce to the system to make it more convenient? You know, yeah. I don't want to give that perception that, you know, the better house Negro that you'll play, it'll be easier for you. That's just not what I'm saying. But I also think that in some of the backgrounds that we come from, like we're used to survival. So we stick to ourselves, we're introverts, especially when we think about first and second generation immigrants, Haitians, Jamaicans, Spanish mm-hmm. people, right? A lot of the times, you know, coming from where you come from, being close to yourself and sticking with your family is how you survived. So a lot of the times when you come into the corporate work culture, you're naturally inclined to be an introvert or stick to yourself, because that is due to survival instincts. Mm-hmm. and that may not be understood by, you know, for everyone in the crowd. So if you have that dynamic and you know, and you have experiences where sticking with your family kept you safe, staying introverted kept you safe, especially if, you know, maybe you weren't supposed to be here, right? Imagine illegal immigrants in this country. They probably are very a close-knit circle, so they don't trigger anything. And that may be a different conversation. But I'm just giving you an example of why children of these backgrounds may have these behaviors of sticking to themselves. Mm. We have to be able to break out of that shell.
Right, and having these conversations, I think, is definitely going to help. Because I'm going to be honest, I haven't had this conversation with too many people. And it wasn't, I mean, you know, realistically, it wasn't until I was a little vocal about it that even caught your attention. Then we started talking, we got to talk about this. You know what I mean? We got to unpack it. Right. So just a handful of times that I've actually talked about this in a meaningful way that's actually creating a dialogue. And not only that, validating what I'm feeling and experiencing. It happened live. When I talked about being labeled as angry, it literally was the next sentence in the article that we were reading. I'm like, holy shit, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So that power of being seen and what you're feeling, you're not alone, is dope. And it's also good to see that I don't have to acquiesce to this white standard of excellence or success. Yes, I can be successful at work in the corporate world, and I could go home and throw on a jersey, a fitted, listen to hip hop, you get what I'm saying, reggaeton, and those two things are the same. It could be the both. It doesn't mean
it's the same person.
It's the same person. It doesn't matter. There is like you know, this. There's this success archetype in America, and it's a white male. Let's be honest, you know, right? With a certain living in a certain type of home with a certain type of vehicle, but it we have to break down that myth. And no, there's geniuses and successful CEOs all around you, bro. All around you. You know, it's just a matter of sharing those stories and being able to see that in each other, right? That I think it's going to help. So even just having this dialogue with you gives me a lot of, you know, gratitude, right? And hope, because you've accomplished some things that I'm like, damn, I be thinking about, my damn, Ken did it. Shit, maybe I got a chance. You know what I mean? And that kind of mentality is dangerous for them. You get what I'm saying? That's the kind of thing they were trying to break down. So going back to what you were saying, as a community, building that back up, the kind of power we reclaim in that is impactful.
Oh, appreciate it. And that's what we have these conversations for. So I'll tell a quick story. So I was at a work fundraiser. And there was a young lady, she was the only person of color, she happens to be Haitian, and she was sitting at the bar while the work party is taking place around her. Mm. And, you know, I make my rounds, I come back, she's still sitting in the same space. So I go up to this young lady and I say, hey, you know, you didn't come to a work social event to be unsocial. Right? And as I got to know this person, I started to understand some of the anxiety that they had around simply being them in the space that we were in. And they maybe felt like, well, people are so different. And I said, well, hey, you know, different than me, and they may look at me different. Well, also, hey, maybe focus on the ways that we are similar and engaging in that sort of conversation will open doors for you to better understand them and them to better understand you. And I think that has to be an essential part of this process, because I don't necessarily think that it's all race related. I think race is a huge part of it. Sometimes it's cultural nuances. Sometimes people are just people and they're simply, you know, they have blinders on to everything else going on besides them. But having conversations and having dialogue or building relationships are some of the tools that helps us transcend lines. So I have many friends that are white. I have black ones. I have Spanish ones, right? Yeah. And every conversation that we have, we acknowledge our differences, and it's okay. Yeah, I have several friends, you know. My boy Mike's Italian. He says, yo, he calls me his brother. He calls me, tells me he loves me. Yo, bro, you don't call me, but I love you, my brother. Bro, he's why does they come, right? Right, but me and Mike are able to transcend some of what the world says divides us and relate into manners that that we know that we could just be people. And I think that we have to be able to have that honest dynamic. And it's tough sometimes. It's tough to put yourself out there. It's easier said than done, because it's not like if you extend your hand, everyone's going to take it. Some people will spit on it. And that's the risk that you take. But you cannot be afraid to build relationships and show who you are. And this young lady went around and started talking to people. And, you know, started making friends. And look at that, right? That does not change the barriers that this person may face in trying to grow within their role. So let's be very specific about what I'm saying. But in terms of the isolation that we may feel and some of the microaggressions that we experience and how out of place we can feel in the workplace, some of that is because how we are culturally inclined, and we have to be able to break some of those cycles. Because I know my mother growing up, we didn't trust nobody.
Right.
Yeah. And if I take that attitude into the workplace, no one will know who I am.
No, it's going to get perceived as something completely different.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
Right. It'll be taken as, oh, this person doesn't care, blah, blah, blah.
Except Lone wolf. But, right. You know, not a team player.
You're just trying to survive.
Trying to survive.
The best way you know how. And I also think forming allegiances in the workplace with people that may experience the same things, if you can, that's great. And I would also like to think that there may be people that have empathy in the work environment that you're in, that when they see that there's a challenge, they come to your aid. This is what strong companies with good culture do. Now, not every company has strong culture. Right now, every company has good leadership, and these are facts that we are reality. You may work for a company with terrible culture. I'm sorry. you may have to find another.
They're out there.
You're out there. But I also don't want people to feel like when they start to face barriers and they start to face obstacles, that it's something that maybe getting to know people may not solve a little bit.
This is true.
You know, I'm pretty sure some of my more aggressive pro-black counterparts may feel differently. But the reality is, this is the human experience, and we are humans. And the ability to, and I'm going to say this word, empathy, is what we have to have. It's who we are. It's a piece of our soul. Like, not to get too religious, but like, you hear stories of Jesus, right? All he did was go around and show empathy to people and help them.
Right.
You have a magic wand to do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. He chose to help people. Like him, not like him. not to start preaching, but I'm just saying, why wouldn't, like, I feel like good people are just going to embrace that. And I would hope that we're going to see more of that inside the workplace and out of it.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. Yeah, man, listen, I've had a great conversation with you today, man. This has been dope.
This was dope, man. It's been impactful and therapeutic for me. Because I got a lot of this stuff on my chest, and I unpacked a lot internally while just kind of listening to you and just reacting to things, like, in the moment, like, actually having time to pause and really talk about this in an intelligent and meaningful way with someone who's definitely going through the same thing. So I appreciate the invitation, and definitely going to continue the conversation, because I'm sure come Monday I'm going to have new shit to talk about, you know what I mean? Because that's just how it goes in this game. But I appreciate the dialogue.
Listen, like, subscribe, share. I probably should have said that more often throughout the podcast. Like, subscribe, share, comment. If you like the content, make sure you follow us. Ultimately, the Universal Frequency Podcast is a podcast where we come and we ultimately, you leave vibrating higher. We're going to talk about the universe and everything in it and to prove our point. But the goal is for you to leave being a better you. Right? That is a universal frequency. I appreciate you guys rocking with us. Yeah, tune in next week, and we are out.
Peace. Peace and love.
Energy, frequency, vibration. Energy, frequency, vibration.